Hey there, Goblin here. I just wanted to give you a heads up that until recently, I've been uploading exclusively on YouTube. So head over there and check out my channel if you're interested in more content, as there are additional videos that don't get uploaded here as podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Now, let's get started. Hello and welcome. I am your host for the evening, Goblin Queen, and tonight I am going to be telling you some tales regarding fairies and other strange beings. And I'm not talking fairy tales. These are real, firsthand experiences, and they all come from, they mostly come from the fairy census. Not all of them. We're going to do a little detracting as we go along, but I promise it's all very fun and worthwhile. But mostly, we will be reading from the fairy census. And if you are familiar with my channel and my videos and the fairy census, then I'm sure you're very tired of hearing me explain it. But if you're not familiar with it, I'll explain it very briefly. I do have other videos where I talk about it and read stories from it if you want to hear more. But basically, the fairy census is a research document and project, and it's curated and spearheaded by Simon Young, who is a folklore researcher and historian. And he set about for the last 10 years or so collecting people's real fairy encounters. And he did this by means of a survey that you can fill out and submit to anonymously and tell your story about seeing a fairy or what you determine to fall under the category of fairy and some other details, but it is anonymous, and then it will be submitted to the fairy census. There are now two fairy censuses. Census is a word, I don't know, hopefully. And each of these have 500 or so fairy sightings. So he has collected, he has published 1,000 real fairy encounters. That might be surprising to some of you that over 1,000 people have really claimed to see fairies, when a lot of people think fairies just exist in books and movies. But one of the reasons that Simon Young is doing this survey is to see what the modern attitudes and beliefs regarding fairies are. So it's very, very interesting. It is free to read online and, of course, to submit to. So I'll talk a little bit more about that in the end, but I will have links for these things if you're interested. Anyway, if all of that sounds good to you and you are intrigued by hearing people's experiences seeing fairies, let's get started. The first story we're going to read comes from Kentucky, and this took place between 2000 and 2010, when the witness was between the ages of 11 and 20 years old, and the time was between 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. There is a bog near my home in Kentucky. It is accessible to anyone because there is a popular paved bike / walking trail that runs past it. However, there are also several foot trails through the woods that also lead to the far side of the bog. I was walking through the trails one day, somewhere in my mid-teens. I think I was about 14 at the time, when I started to hear talking. I could hear conversation from strange, gurgling voices that seemed to be close to me, just beyond my reach, and also very far from me, all at the same time. I stopped to listen, but couldn't catch any words in English, even though I could clearly hear the voices fading in and out from a distance. I finally decided to see who was speaking, because it was very odd to meet people on these trails. Maybe the occasional hunter on a four-wheeler, but I had heard no engines. I came out of the woods to the bog, and the voices hushed a bit, but did not stop. I looked around and could see clear across the muddy water. There was no one on the paved trail as far down the path as I was able to see, no one on any side of the bog. I looked out over the water, listening to the voices fade and twist and change like they were coming to me on the wind. Then, out of the corner of my eye, I saw movement in the water. It was the strangest thing I've ever seen. I almost couldn't see it, even though it was sunny and bright outside. It faded into the water, this weird, muddy blob of a thing with eyes that looked straight through me. I stared at it for a long time, and then suddenly it fell away into the water with a huge splash. At the same exact time, about 4 or 5 splashes just like that one happened across the entire bog. Ever since then, I have felt strange every time I went to the bog. I still hear voices from time to time and splashes, even though the water is stagnant and has no fish. All right, that's our first story to get us started. I love that one. It was almost a little Lovecraftian to me, something about the details concerning the voices they heard being weird and gurgly. It reminded me of Whisper in Darkness, one of my favorite Lovecraft stories. Also, we had a bog story not too long ago in the last Liminal Earth video I did, and the description of these beings was very unique and intriguing as well. Here's an additional description they give of these creatures. Blobs of mud with small, spiny hands and small, shining black eyes. And they specify that they were infant-sized. That's not what I was expecting. I was picturing something much larger, and something about them being infant-sized is, I don't know, it's a little creepier to me. I just wasn't expecting that. And they reiterate the sounds they heard as gurgling, low whispers that seemed to distort, as if they were fading in and out. They also say that the place has a reputation for being haunted. I would love to hear what other stories and legends pertain to that place. Of course, Simon Young takes care to omit the actual locations of the submissions so that these places aren't disturbed by people who want to go fairy hunting. So, as much fun as it would be to know where some of these stories took place, it's better off for natural areas and private homes that we don't know. One of the questions presented in the fairy census submission form is, what, in your opinion, are fairies? To this, the witness replied, fairies are elemental beings that exist on a different plane of existence. Personally, I tend to agree. If asked to define fairies, I probably would give a similar answer. I do tend to think of them as being tied or relating to nature and the elements, and I also think that they can access and flit between different planes of existence or dimensions or whatever it may be. Of course, there's no right answer. Everyone has their own perspective on what a fairy is, with the most popular and widespread opinion being that fairies aren't real. I'm okay with not knowing if fairies are real or not. Mystery is the spice of life, after all, in my opinion. And plus, so many people have had their own experiences with what they perceive as fairies. Like I said, Simon Young has published over 1,000 now, and he's only collecting more all the time. So, let's get back to hearing some of those, shall we? The next one is pretty wild. It took place in Minnesota between 2010 and 2019, when the author was in their 20s. The time was between 9 a.m. and 12 p.m. A group of 25 friends and I went camping in the far north of Minnesota. On our fourth day, we found a secluded island in one of the lakes and decided to do some fishing and extended camping there. After much discussion of what we wanted to do for the fifth day, we decided to stay camped for the day and relax on the island. On the morning of the fifth day, we were all getting ready to go swimming and fishing when a friend called the rest of us over to look at something he found on the other side of the island. When we went to the other side of the island, we were all gobsmacked. We witnessed what can only be described as gnomes, short, about 16 centimeters without a cap on, human-looking beings with tall caps and rough homespun clothing. We witnessed both male and female gnomes, as well as a few children. The gnomes were aware of us, as was obvious by the way they would occasionally shoot us the evil eye, but made no malicious or threatening moves towards us. We sat there and watched the entire village for about 95 minutes or so before we left to go back to our activities. We camped out on the island again that night and were not disturbed by them. I went back near where their village was early the next morning and left a gift of a gold ring that was supposed to be given to my deceased fiancé. I think it's what she would have wanted, because I remember reading about gnomes working with gold as a child. Wow. Most people get a glimpse of a fairy, a gnome, anything paranormal. And here, these people had a prolonged, clear sighting of a colony of gnomes. Can you believe that? Well, I'm sure a lot of people would find this very hard to believe. I think the first question many would have is, why didn't you take a picture or a video? This took place within the last 15 years, so by this time, everyone definitely had a smartphone glued to their person. And they don't mention anything about attempting to take a photo or recording, or not having their phones on them due to being camping, etc., etc. Honestly, I know we have the instinct now of whipping our phones out and snapping a photo of any and everything we lay our eyes on, but I actually am of the mind that if you are in this situation, that you shouldn't try and take a photo. One reason being that I think you should just take in your experience, and interrupting it by trying to record evidence could disrupt it. You could startle whatever you're seeing off, or it could happen so fast that by the time you get your phone out, it's over. So I think you should just take the opportunity to let the events unfold, if you even get the time to have that thought, because I think when people are in an instance where they are face to face with a paranormal entity or experience or something so strange and unbelievable, I don't think their first thought is, where's my phone? I need to take a picture. And in most cases, most of these experiences are so brief that you don't even get the time to think about anything. It's over before you know it. This did last over an hour, so they probably had time for their base reactions and emotions to process, and they had time to grab their phone or camera if they wanted to, and why they chose not to, they didn't say. The last thing I wanted to say on this topic is that when it comes to these kinds of things, whether it's ghosts, fairies, aliens, cryptids, whatever, there is an obsession from third parties and the media to obtain evidence from the witness. And if there isn't any, then they are most of the time just simply dismissed. We live in a very evidence-based time. I need to see it, to believe it, you know, that kind of thing. But of course, I believe that people's stories and experiences should be valued and considered regardless of evidence or lack thereof. Okay, I digress on that. Let's continue. They gave extensive additional physical descriptions of the gnomes that I'll read for you now. Human-like, including facial features. Short, about 16 centimeters without a hat. With hat, approximately 28 centimeters. Rough, homespun clothing of different colors. Tall hats of the colors blue, green, orange, red, and purple. When speaking to one another, I would describe it as a mixture of Swedish and Danish. One was playing something like a pan flute in this very rich and intoxicating melody that reminded me of a mixture of birdsong and Celtic music. My grandma had a book that I read as a child about gnomes, and they were identical to what was described in the book. Finally, they add this. I'm an airplane pilot, and prior to that, private investigator. So discussing something like this could potentially ground me and call my prior work into question. So, there you have it. If you had trouble believing their account, maybe that comment will lead you to reconsider. Maybe that's even the reason they didn't try and take any photographic evidence. Like I said before, submissions to the fairy census are anonymous, which I think allows the opportunity to hear stories that people wouldn't normally share, whether it's for reasons like this witness's needing to protect their professional reputation, or because people are afraid of facing scrutiny or ridicule for sharing their quote-unquote unbelievable stories. Regardless of if you believe this really occurred, or how you think the witness should have handled it, I think it is a fascinating story, and I sincerely hope there are colonies of lovely little gnome families living in the lakes of Minnesota. This next story took place in Missouri in the 1970s, when the witness was between the ages of 11 and 20, and it occurred between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. I walked into my room with a towel around me from showering, I sat on my bed getting ready to dry my hair when a movement over at the window caught my attention. There they were, little men walking in a line across the branch with a small leap over to my open window. They went across the sill and then jumped down onto what I assume was the water meter next to the house under my window. I couldn't wrap my head around what I was seeing. It had to be a trick of the early evening shadows. I leaned forward to get a bit closer, even though my room was tiny. No, it was small men, about 8 to 10 inches tall. They were wearing what looked like lederhosen. They all wore hats, too. The hats were very strange. They looked like boxes made into poorly designed hats. I became so frightened. I wanted to run for it, but I didn't want to draw attention to myself. They never acted like they saw me, though I don't know how that's possible. I could feel the fear of seeing this getting so strong, and then the next thing I know, I'm waking up at the end of my bed, with the towel still around me, and it's totally dark outside. Pretty fun little story there. The witness said, of course, that they experienced time loss, common in fairy experiences throughout time and legend, as well as with UFO encounters. They also report hair prickling or tingling before the experience and unusually vivid memories of the event. Here's the additional description they give of the little men. They all looked almost the same. They're about 8 inches or so. I could see ratty hair sticking out from under their hats. They had knobby knees and old-fashioned type hobnob boots on. I don't remember seeing socks. They looked like little German men in lederhosen. I always thought they had very strange hats on, but I do remember seeing a couple of them with their arms up like they were balancing their hats. I now, in hindsight, wonder if they were carrying boxes instead. The hats did look like strange boxes. There are a couple similarities between this story and the previous one we read. Both stories describe seeing groups of beings, and in fairy terminology, these would be considered trooping fairies, which is, simply put, a subcategorization of fairies that travel in groups, as opposed to solitary fairies, which are seen alone. Simon Young has a theory or a rule when it comes to reports of trooping fairies, and that is that they are almost always described as wearing nearly the same clothing with little variation. For example, in the previous story, all the gnomes were seen wearing rough homespun clothing and tall hats. Basically, they all seemed to be wearing the same sort of outfit in different colors. And in the story we just read with the little men on the windowsill, they were all wearing lederhosen, boots, and strange box-like hats. The witness even says they all looked almost the same. Now, what this means exactly, I don't know, but it's interesting that it seems to be a consistent detail in sightings of groups of fairies. Let's move on to our next story. This one took place in Germany between 2000 and 2010, when the witness was under the age of 10, between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. When I was 10 years old, I stayed at a friend's house. My friend had to leave the room for a moment, so I amused myself by looking out the window. In one of the neighboring backyards, I saw a giant ginger cat. It looked identical to any normal pet cat, only the size of a fully grown human. I called over my friend's younger sister, who was around 5 years old at the time, and she saw the cat too. It lazily crossed the entire garden and entered the greenhouse, barely fitting through the door. I kept watching for a while, but it didn't come out again. I later told the story to my friend and her mom, who were quite incredulous. Of course, the younger sister said she didn't remember seeing anything. Later that day, I told my mom about the encounter, and she confirmed that when she was around my age, she too saw a cat in her grandma's village. Looking out the window, she spied a human-sized cat passing by, its head and back protruding over the garden wall. Ugh. I found that story to be adorable. I'm an avid cat lover and owner myself. Now, big cats exist, of course, but more along the lines of pumas, panthers, tigers, things like that. And as far as house cats go, Maine Coons are known to get quite large, but not as big as a human. You may wonder what connection this story has to fairies. Well, in response to the question posed in the submission form, why do you think your experience was a fairy experience, as opposed to a ghost or an alien or an angel or some other type of anomalous experience? The witness of this story says, "It seemed more plausible to me that the cat was a nature being somehow, rather than an alien, etc. I don't believe in angels." And, actually, cats do have several ties to fairy lore. Indeed, they have ties to any and everything relating to the supernatural. But when it comes to fairies, there is a being in Scottish folklore called the Cait Chie, which translates from Celtic to fairy cat. It is described as being as large as a dog, black with a white spot on its chest. They're said to be able to transform into witches, but only 9 times. And can steal the souls of freshly deceased corpses, unless the bodies are monitored and careful precisions are taken, such as placing catnip in all rooms except the one with the body, and lighting fires in all the other rooms so that a cat is not drawn to curl up at the fireside next to the corpse. In the Scottish Highlands, it is also advised to place a saucer of milk on your doorstep on the night of Samhain or Halloween, so that the Cait Chie will bless your livestock for the remainder of the year. You know, I do have a cat that fits this description, a black cat with a white chest. And technically, he could be considered as big as a dog if that dog was, say, a chihuahua. Anyway, I thought that story was really cute. And I found it to be very intriguing that the witness's mother also saw a gigantic cat when she was a child. For the next story, we are going to be going to Florida. This took place between 2010 and 2020, when the witness was in their 30s, and the time was between midnight and 3 a.m. There was a period of time where I would hear the soft jingle of a bell and the pattering of tiny feet in my room, even when no pets were present. None of my pets wore bells on their collars, nor had tags at the time. The sound occurred at any given time of day, but would pick up more at night. Sometimes, I not only heard this strange tiny bell, but felt something jump up on the bed, only for me to find it empty. It was also during this period that I awoke more than once to 3 small, diminutive beings with black skin. They wore hoods and old-world clothing and dark shades. They were standing on top of my shelf, picking through a collection of seashells I had on display. I watched as they carefully lifted the shells, their little faces both delighted and fascinated. I could hear the soft clacking of the scallops as they moved them. Once they took notice of me observing, they faded away into the darkness. A couple of other times, I would awake to find them sitting in my hanging plants, looking through the leaves curiously. These plants were hung from a hook in my ceiling. They would look down at me, observingly. When they realized I was watching them too, they would disappear in the same way they did when looking through my seashells. Sometimes knocking could be heard in the walls, on windows, and on doors, only for there to be no one. My father also had observed them in the garden, and once right after our house was built. Our house was the first built in our neighborhood. It was once a chunk of woods that had been cleared and developed into what is now our home. We believe that the destruction of the woods may have triggered the strange activity. I believe we upset the natural beings that once inhabited the area. Being half Spaniard, I grew up with the belief in duendes. They are a form of fairy in our culture stemming back from the time of our Celtiberian ancestors. There are different forms of duende, and I believe I may have encountered some form of them. Duendes are a domestic form of fairy that can vary in nature from being playful to downright evil. I believe the ones I encountered were possibly benign. There's something about this story I really like. Part of it is the imagery of these little hooded creatures looking through the witness's seashell collection or sitting in the hanging plants looking down at them. It's very cute. The witness describes the beings as having black skin and dark clothing in varying shades of black and grays. The clothing appeared to be hoods, an old world clothing with pointed shoes, and they described the sounds they heard as tiny bells. Of course, bells have a strong association with fairies. This is something that comes up time and time again with the presence of fairies, is the sound of bells. In response to the question, do you know if the place of the experience had a reputation for fairies? They said, my house was built on a piece of land that was wooded. It was cleared right before the house was built. And many people would hear this and suppose that the creatures had a direct relationship to the woods that were cleared. Luckily, they didn't seem to be outwardly threatening or upset that their woods were gone. Sad as it is, we hate the displacement of fairies, goblins, and all little animals alike. It sounds like they had a little ghost cat, or a fairy cat, roaming around as well. They mentioned hearing a little bell, again, fairies, accompanying the pattering of feet and the feeling of something jumping up on the bed. Anyone with a bed and a pet knows that feeling. The feeling of something jumping up and little, the pressure of little feet coming towards you. My cat, my fairy cat, likes to come and lay on my chest. I personally find that one of the perks to owning cats is that when you hear a weird noise at night in your house and you're in bed, you can just say, oh, it's just the cat. Whatever that was, just the cat. You don't have to be left wondering if you have to go investigate something or not, or if you have some sort of intruder, physical or spiritual. I recall wasn't one of those classic two-sentence horror stories back in the day, something along the lines of I woke up to feeling my cat jump up on the bed and crawl over to me, cuddle with me, but I don't have a cat, something like that. That happened in the story, for real. So, next story takes place in Colorado in the 1990s, when the witness was in their 30s, and the time was between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. I was in my car with a friend driving down a country road near a small bridge in the Redwoods Forest. All of a sudden, a half-man, half-animal creature with little nubby horns ran in front of the car and trotted in front of us for some distance. When the road got to the small bridge, the being ran off the road and went down under the bridge where we couldn't see him anymore. While he was running in front of our car, we got a really good look at him. We saw him as plain as day. He was amazingly beautiful, and we saw him in amazing detail. His top half was a human body that looked like a well-built young man all the way down to the belly button. And then the bottom half was the lower half of a shaggy, goat-like being that matched the size of his top half. He had small, nubby little horns coming out of his head, right at around the forehead hairline. He had light-colored, curly hair that came down to the base of his skull. His face was very pleasant. We felt absolutely no fear while seeing him, only a sense of wonder and excitement. It was one of the happiest events of my life. My friend and I that saw him were not on any form of intoxicants. We were completely clear-headed. I feel very blessed to have had this experience. Wow, I don't even know what to say to that. It's definitely not every day you come across satyr, fawn sightings, goblins, fairies. Those are rare enough, but yeah, how many beautiful fawn men sightings do you hear of? Sounds like a scene out of myth or legend, or the beginning of some paranormal romance novel. So, in this story, the creature is described as being half man, half goat. And I'll say it before, and I'll say it again, there are lots of goatman legends across the United States. I have a whole video discussing just a few of them. This particular being sounds like a satyr or a faun from Roman and Greek mythology, and it got me to wondering if there have been any centaur sightings. Sounds wild, right? But the world is full of possibilities, and I did end up coming across a very interesting website, and I think I just have to share it with you. It comes from the blog of Linda Godfrey. I'm sure some, if not many of you, will have heard of her, but I was unfamiliar. Apparently, she is a paranormal researcher and author of several books in which she collects people's encounters with monsters and cryptids. It seems like she has a particular focus on dogmen and werewolf-type creatures. She also seems to have a number of TV appearances as well on paranormal-focused shows. This post I found was from September 2015, and it's entitled Centaurs and Elkmen, Recent Reports. I received a report this week from a woman whose coworker urged her to call me after she told him about the encounter she and a friend and their siblings had as children. It occurred on the outskirts of southern Richmond, Virginia in 1966 when she was 8. The now 54-year-old former IRS employee and Greyhound bus driver spoke by phone with me on September 1st, and she seemed as serious and credible as any eyewitness I've ever talked to. I remember the sighting vividly, she said. She and her friend, along with a few younger siblings, had sneaked out to play in a nearby 4-acre park and rec area at dusk one summer evening. A creek ran through the acreage, and the group followed a path from their apartment buildings through a tree line that opened onto the play area. The children had been there only a short time, however, when they heard a familiar sound that the writer described as between a movie-style ghost-like moan and the whinny of a horse. They'd often heard the same thing from inside their apartment. Her parents always tried to blame it on a nearby trucking company, but the trucks were most active in the daytime, she said, and the weird moan was only heard at dusk and nighttime. She looked around and saw a tall, dark figure watching her from about a block away. It looked human from the top of its head to the bottom of the torso, she said, but the rest of it resembled the bottom half of a horse, horse legs, hooves, tail, and all. It was too dark to see its face, she said, but there were no ears, and the head area looked much more hairy and shaggy than the smoothly furred remainder, but she knew at once that no human could imitate the thin legs with hooves. This was not someone dressed in a costume. This thing was real. It was a creature. It was alive, she said. As soon as the beast noticed she was watching it, it began to run toward her, the human-like arm limbs being held in a bent position with elbows slightly to the side. She shrieked, grabbed her 4-year-old brother, and the whole group began running for the tree line with the creature in pursuit. It sounded like the beat of horse hooves, even on the grass. When they reached the tree line that marked the edge of the park, she turned around to see where the creature was. It stopped too, about half a block away, its rear end and haunches partially turned as the torso and head twisted to watch her. She estimated it stood about 7 to 8 feet tall. The small group continued beating a hurried path to their home. Their parents, naturally, did not believe them, but she says her friend and brother still talk about it with her to this day. She added that she was not one to believe in ghosts and never had any other weird or paranormal incidents. The creature the children saw in Richmond reminded me of classic depictions of a satyr or goatman, although those are always two-legged, and satyr reports are a bit more frequent. Many parts of the U.S. have their own goatman legends. I also receive an occasional deerman report. In both types, it sometimes happens that the witness will see one of my sketches of the upright wolf-like creatures I more often investigate, and will say, yes, that's it. So perhaps some cases are examples of mistaken perception, but this writer was quite sure there was a total of 6 limbs. So what then to make of a centaur report I received last May? This incident happened around 1970 in Arizona, between Sierra Vista and Benson, as 2 young men drove along Highway 90. They were forced to stop when their car's engine suddenly stalled, and they got out to take a look. They couldn't figure out what was wrong, so they got back in and were sitting there when they heard the sound of hooves running right at them. They turned to look out the rear window and there saw a half-man, half-horse creature rear up and start smashing into the back end of their car with its front hooves. There was no mention of separate arms, so I'm not sure about that point. His friend began screaming to get them out of there, and the driver's frantic efforts to restart the engine somehow worked, and they sped away. The driver told his parents when he finally reached home and recalled that his mother said, "What are you doing that caused the devil to show you that demon?" One family member added they remembered that the back of the car was deeply dented all over, as if someone had been banging it with rocks. One more story came to me yesterday, except this was from a woman who was driving with her son on a mountain pass in the western U.S. 8 years ago. She wrote, "This happened on the summit of Bridge Creek, between Ingelium and Nespelum, Washington. It is on the Colville Arrow Lakes Tribe Reservation. I was told by some of the elders that there has been sightings of a deer man who has been seen near Nespelum. The elders say that when he is seen, it's a sign that the person is going to die. I don't know anyone who has seen him, but I've heard stories. I've never heard of an elk man before. What my son and I saw was a herd of elk, and in the middle of them was one that, from the neck up, was a man. He was reaching up into a tree. There was no way it was a costume. He was ugly and had ratty black hair and a bare chest. It was only for a brief second that we saw it, but it was long enough that we both looked at each other and said, "Did you just see what I saw?" All right, I know that was long, but man, those are some awesome stories. Deer or elk men sound crazy to me, and I don't mean crazy in a derogatory way. I mean that they sound very, very interesting. Definitely something I'd like to hear more about, so hopefully we will in the future. Isn't it interesting that nearly all of these goat men or satyr, elk men, and centaur stories occurred while the witnesses were driving? In the very first one from the fairy census, I was thinking that maybe they just kind of mistook something for a satyr creature since they were in motion, but it did occur between 3 and 6 p.m., so it's possible it was in daylight, depending on the time of year. Also, they didn't say that it just briefly ran by. They said it ran in front of them for a prolonged amount of time, and that they were able to get a very good look at the creature. I did wonder how they got such a good look at the face and the hairline and the horns and such, if the being was running in front of them. They also had another witness with them. So, I guess that means it's possible that beautiful satyr men are roaming about in Colorado. Keep your eyes peeled. That Elkman story was kind of freaky, wasn't it? They did not say he was beautiful. And they also said that they only saw him for a brief second while driving. So, who knows? Regardless, I love these stories. Which would you rather see? A beautiful goat man or a creepy towering elk man? Let's keep going. Let's read a few more stories. This next one is a short one. It took place in Kent, England, in the 1950s when the witness was under the age of 10, between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. I slept in a cot in my mother and father's bedroom when I was a small child. I used to see the green man in the opposite corner of the room. He stood between the wall and my mother and father's wardrobe. I felt the green man was there of his own free will to look after me. That's a sweet story. You know how babies are always staring at some random spot in the corner of the ceiling and you just wonder what they're looking at? Well, maybe it's the green man. The witness said he was a man dressed from head to foot in green, wearing a green hat. He didn't mention his skin being green, and it's kind of a spooky little place for him to stand, smushed in between the wall and the wardrobe. Now, do you think he means that he was behind it or next to it? Behind it would be the most strange, right? Because he'd have to really be wedged in there. I don't know. He said it was a nice experience, but it does sound a little spooky. I'm glad it was a pleasant experience for him, though. Also, the witness does capitalize green man. I'm sure many of you are familiar with the green man associated with neo-paganism. And I do go into some detail about him in a video of mine called Little Green Men, but I don't think I will go into that now. So if you aren't familiar, you can watch that or just Google search green man. He'll come up. So that was a short one, and the next one we'll read is a long one, and it does concern a parent deteriorating from cancer. I just wanted to make a mention of that in case that subject matter is sensitive for you at this time. It took place in Northeast England between 2010 and 2020. The following experience perhaps differs somewhat from what one might expect from a fairy encounter. In advance to describing the events, it is fair to say that I acknowledge that in scientific terms that the event could be ascribed to delirium or medicinal/illness-induced hallucination, and otherwise, on metaphysical terms, could also be interpreted as deathbed visitation/vision or an encounter with an angel or ghost. As I am familiar with fairy lore, there were certain aspects that I recognized from descriptions of encounters with the fair folk. In 2012, at the age of 78, my mother was sadly diagnosed with lung cancer and received radiation therapy, which actually shrunk the tumor size by about half and cleared the cancerous cells from the lymph nodes. However, by late spring the next year, it was clear that she was ailing, and it was discovered that new cancerous activity was occurring in her pleural cavity. Her health rapidly failed, and she became increasingly bedridden. It was at this point that she first described her visions, initially in sleep, and later on the cusp of sleep, and later still in wakefulness. She described dreams in which she would see a young child with curly golden hair. He was always silent, but her face lit up as she described his beautiful smile. As her illness progressed, the child would visit her more, and her appetite decreased as it became apparent that this child was feeding her in her dreams. Whilst she was half asleep, I would see her raise her hand to her mouth and chew. This made things difficult for me, as when I woke her up to feed her, she would argue that she was already full from feasting on the bramble pie and the meats and greens that the golden-haired child had given her, and I struggled to get her to eat something and later, still, even to drink. My mind instantly thought of the folktales that warn of eating fairy food, for it would cause a person to wither away and grow distant from the world. I also thought of how one theory of the fairy races is that they are spirits of the dead, initially the inhabitants of the Barrow Hill graves. As the illness progressed, I recall that my mother started to look less like herself. She did not develop that gaunt, thin look that is common with some advanced cancer care cases. For me, it was mainly her eyes that did not look like her own. Her eyes were naturally dark, but they became black, as if her pupils were dilated to entirely cover her irises. Sometimes her eyes had a wild look, but frequently they looked as if they were gazing beyond this world. To my mind, it was that with every passing day, there was less of my mother, and in her place, more of a disease that had taken her shape. It also reminded me of the stocks of folklore, the facsimiles that the fair folk would leave in place of the people they had taken. At this point, my mother stopped speaking of seeing the golden-haired child, but she did not stop seeing visions or visitors. Regularly appearing to her within the family home where we cared for her were two teenagers who she described as being thin and ragged. The girl visitant, she said, had something wrong with her mouth, perhaps a disease of some sort. These apparitions she referred to herself as the ghosts. One time she'd just been lying quiet, and then reacted as if someone had come into the room, and she just spoke to the rest of us in the room non-specifically, saying, "They don't mean any harm." Before it became necessary for me to sleep in the room as the main carer, I set up a system where I had a doorbell set up in the bedroom, and she could ring the bell if she needed me during the night. On one occasion, I was called at about 3 a.m. to see the cat on her bed. She was pleased to see it, and described it as brown, and I took it to be a description of our tortoiseshell cat, who had died the previous summer after being hit by a car. Incidentally, for weeks following the cat's death, my mother, myself, and my father had all independently kept seeing the cat. Our sightings of the ghost cat had ceased straight away when we all disclosed to each other we had seen her. So, I instantly assumed that it was our cat that my mother professed to see, but having read of the encounters of the cat-like fairies in the excerpts of Seeing Fairies by Simon Young and in Fortean Times, I also mentioned that. Another occasion, I was called down to see a cloud of butterflies in the room. A coincidence or syncretism regarding the butterflies is that for years my family have recorded our butterfly sightings for the Butterfly Conservation Organization. Early in the summer of 2013, I had hardly seen any butterflies, but on the day of my mother's death on July 23rd, I saw many butterflies. My mother died in hospital and was rarely conscious much of the time spent there. It was only in that time that she was administered morphine. At home, she was taking varied medication, but nothing stronger than tramadol. In the hospital, she did not speak of seeing the golden child or the ghosts anymore. But whilst she was still on a communal ward, an old lady in a neighboring bed mentioned a name that my mother had said during the night in an apparent conversation, and the name was that of one of her friends who had died earlier in the year. I appreciate that the events described may not be of the same vein as other experiences reported, but I wanted to report because of my interpretation in relation to aspects of other fairy lore. So, quite a lot of interesting stuff detailed there. As the author acknowledges, it may just be that some of these things, particularly the apparitions, were induced by their mother's illness and her deteriorating mental and physical state, and that the person who submitted the story just interpreted these things as supernatural through her knowledge and bias of fairy lore. They mentioned that they are an author and illustrator of a book relating to fairies, but the title of the book is edited out since, as we mentioned before, the fairy census is anonymous. Now, I admittedly don't really know if this type of behavior fits into palliative or hospice care. I don't really have any experience with that myself at this point. I've heard of deathbed visions, which the person who submitted the story did mention and acknowledge, which are spiritual hallucinations or visions. But those generally appear either right before death or within 24 hours of death. This, however, seems to have been strung out and occurred for over a year or more. On one hand, you could argue that these visions, dreams, and visitations were symptoms of the mother's illness and state of health, but you could also argue that as one is approaching death, they gain more psychic abilities because the veil between life and afterlife is thinning. Regardless, it's very, very interesting stuff. There are so many interesting stories that come from people who are witnessing people at this stage of life in hospice care. As heartbreaking as death is to those of us left in its wake, it's undoubtedly fascinating because we don't have the answers yet about what comes after. And none of us really know what the process is like until we're there. Anyway, that can be kind of a serious, heavy topic. Let's read one more story and we'll go out on something not quite so heavy and grim. This story took place in Oxfordshire in the 1990s when the witness was in their 20s, and the time was between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. I was on the bus on the way home from work when I found myself unable to get up from my stop. The feeling of paralysis ended as I passed my stop, and we were going past the field behind my house. I got off in the next village and walked back past the field. As I walked past a thorn tree, I saw something come out from behind the tree and start walking behind me. Whenever I turned, it disappeared, but it kept following me along a path at the edge of the field and all the way to my back gate. I could see it in my peripheral vision, and it was a classic gnome-type creature, except for the hat, which was what looked like a flat cap made from dark brown leather. He was around 2 feet high, and his body and clothing were all dark brown and leathery. I saw him many times after that, and was only convinced of his reality when I saw him go over to our cat and stroke him, and the cat responded exactly as if a person had stroked him. Since then, I have seen many others. Strange, bark-skinned figures who came out of the trees to watch an Easter sunrise service. A radiant figure by a stream. A classic green man, which, until that encounter, I had considered mere metaphor. And many more. I do not consider myself psychic, but I am a druid and spend a lot of time in nature and live my life with respect for it. What a lovely, interesting little experience. Very brief, and they briefly mentioned some other very interesting encounters that I would love to hear more about. Any one of those. Bark-skinned figures, radiant figures, green men. Hopefully they'll submit these individually to the fairy census. But for now, I think a cat-stroking gnome is a fabulous way to go out, don't you? I hope you enjoyed these stories tonight. Again, they all come from the fairy census, of which there are currently two, but the third is already in progress and submissions are open. If you have your own real fairy experience you would like to submit, you can go to fairyist.com, fairyist.com/survey. I will also have the links to that in the description of the video, as well as where you can read the fairy census 1 and 2 for yourself. And if this topic interests you, I highly encourage you to seek out more essays and books from Simon Young. He also has a podcast called Boggart and Banshee, which I highly recommend. His intention is not to prove that fairies are real, because that's a hopeless task, but to gather data on modern attitudes towards fairies. He says, I want to understand not whether fairies exist, but what kind of people have fairy experiences and in what circumstances. So, it's for research purposes, but I also find great enjoyment out of reading and examining the stories that people submit to the census. And like I've said before, I think it provides a wonderful opportunity for people to share their story anonymously when they otherwise might never share their story for full judgment or to uphold professional reputation. If you want to watch the other videos I have of reading stories from the fairy census, those are all on a playlist called Fairies on my channel. That'll also be on the screen at the end of the video for you to click in just a minute if you want. Fairies are one of my favorite supernatural topics, so they come up quite often in my videos, even in ones not specifically dedicated to the subject. So if you like fairies, stick around. All right, that's all for now. Thank you so, so much for joining me. I'll be back soon with more odd tales. Until then, have a magical evening. Good night.